Shavuos. That's what we just celebrated the last 3 days. And Chag HaShavuos is one that has a lot that people speak about Matan Torah and a lot of different ideas about the Aseres HaDibros. But often what is overlooked is the fact that Chag HaShavuos is called the Chag HaBikurim. Chag HaShavuos is when we start to bring the Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. This is when the season of Bikurim begins. Let's just give a brief introduction. Bikurim is the first fruits that grow in a farmer's land. They must be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. There's a whole list of psukim that has to be recited in the Beis HaMikdash when one gets there. And that is basically the mitzvah of Bikurim. So I just thought it would be nice if we took a couple of important messages, important lessons out of some of the Mishnayos in Bikurim. Obviously, we don't have a chance to go through everything. Obviously, we don't have a chance to say too much, but we're just going to take a little bit out of this very beautiful mitzvah of Bikurim, as I assume most of us probably did not spend too much time thinking about it over Shavuos. So let's get right into it. In the third parak of Mishnayos Bikurim, the Mishnah writes as follows, Hashor Holech Lifneim. So we have a big procession goes up to Yerushalayim, and they have a parade walking in front of them, Vikarnov Mitzupos Zahav. So they have the oxen are walking in front of them, Vikarnov Mitzupos Zahav. They coat the horns of the shor of this ox in gold, because they want to show how excited they are about the fact that they're going to Yerushalayim to offer the Bikurim. Va'atara shel zayis berosha, they put a beautiful crown on the head of the animal. Hachalil maka lifneim, they have a band is marching in front of them with instruments. Ad shemagiyim karav liYerushalayim. So this is the way. Imagine you have a farmer is coming all the way out from the Negev, and he's traveling all the way from the Negev to Yerushalayim, and he has this accompaniment in front of him. It's very exciting. It's a beautiful thing. And he has this trumpet blowing in front of him. Now they finally get close to Yerushalayim. Shalchulif name. So they send messengers ahead into Yerushalayim to let everybody know that the farmers have come from wherever they have come. Hapachos, Hasganim, Hagizbarim, Yotzim, Lekrosim. And all the various people who work in Yerushalayim used to come out of their town, come out of Yerushalayim to greet all the people who are coming from all the different areas of Eretz Yisrael to offer the Bikurim. And the Fikavod HaNechnasim HaYoyotzim, depending on how dignified the farmers were, that's how many people would react, would come out to celebrate with them. We'll get to that statement in a few minutes. B'chol Bali Umnes Shebi Yerushalayim, then once they got into Yerushalayim proper, so you had every little makolet is standing there. He can't just leave his shop. But the yoy used to come out of the shops into the streets. Vishalim vishlamam. They would give them a bow. They would say, hello. Achenu anshe hamakom ploni. They would say, welcome. You know, this one from wherever you come. Basem l'shalom. You know, I felt this a little bit. I went this year to the Chabad Shluchim conference. If you've never been, it's an amazing thing. It's only for men, but they have one for women. It's a really inspiring event. I was really blown away by the whole event. I think one of the most inspiring parts was they have shluchim come from all over the world, and each one of them bring a few of their constituents from their community, and then they go through a roll call, and they welcome each community that's there. It takes about like 30, 40 minutes for them to do this. It's amazing. But each one stands up, and everyone applauds them and thanks them for the work that they're doing. And that's basically, it reminded me of this Mishnah, that the Mishnah tells us that this is what happened. We applaud the people who are coming from all over the country, and we give them a special mention by name of the community in which they come from. And basically, that's the story of the procession of bringing up the Bikurim to Yerushalayim. The Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Gimel has a discussion, why is it that everybody stands up? Why is it that everyone goes out of their way when the farmers come up to Yerushalayim to bring the Bikurim? What is so unique? What is so special? So the Gemara first says the following reason. The Gemara says, Kedei shelo tehe machshilan li'asad lavo, which means, we want to somehow encourage, we want to somehow inspire the people that next year they should want to do the same thing. And therefore, if we show how respectful we are of what they are doing, if we show that every store owner stops whatever they're doing to give honor, to pay homage to these people who are coming up from all over the country, that will encourage them, that will inspire them to do it again. We all know that kavod is not such a bad thing. Everybody appreciates some kavod a little bit. Everybody appreciates that, and therefore we give it to the farmers to show them that we are willing to invest in them trying to do this mitzvah in the following year. So again, the question has to be, well, how come every time a person puts on tefillin in the morning, why don't we also try to encourage them? How come every time a person lights Shabbos candles, why don't we have a marching band go out in front of them? So there are those who explain, well, when you think about it, the Bikurim is a very minimal mitzvah. What exactly am I doing? I'm taking one pomegranate and one grape and one just one little bits and pieces from my field, and I'm traveling up to Yerushalayim just for this, just for these three, four little fruits that I have? Really, is it worth it? So a farmer might question to himself, okay, I did it once, checklist, did it once in my life, very inspiring, very nice, I'm not going to do it again, it was a waste of time. So we're concerned that a farmer might look down a little bit on the activity which he is involved with it. And therefore, we make sure to go out of our way to encourage them, more so than with other mitzvos, because we really want to make sure that they have a good feeling about what they're doing, and that they will be energized, they'll be inspired to come back again. Now, this is not the only time that the halacha recognizes the importance of encouraging people to do something again, the importance of encouraging somebody to get in the routine of doing something. Take, for example, there's a very famous disagreement from the last generation between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, two of the giants of the previous generation, where they disagreed about the institution of Hatzalah. So nowadays we are blessed to have a Hatzalah organization that takes care of so many of our needs. And the question begs itself, what are you supposed to do when a Hatzalah member goes on call on Shabbos? Are they allowed to return from the hospital after going on the call? So again, if we're talking about a case where there's only one Hatzalah member in the community, and if he's going to be out in the hospital, he's not going to be able to be available to service others who might have an emergency on Shabbos, that's not the case. Obviously, that's pikuach nefesh. But what about when you have many, many Hatzalah members, like in our community, and the only reason to let them come back is because they'll never want to do it again. So are we allowed to tell them to come back, b'mechal Shabbos, even though it's not for the sake of pikuach nefesh? Are we allowed to tell them that they can return from the hospital after they have brought a patient in and taking care of whatever needs of the patient are? So this is a major disagreement between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And they're basically disagreeing about Hitiru Sofa Mishum Tchilasan. The Gemara has a disagreement in Meseches Beitza. What malacha would we allow a person to do to create a better outcome? So that's basically what they're arguing about. But Rav Herzog, when he chimed into the issue, he says, well, we have a much more important consideration. How about the fact that this person will never go again on a call? He tears himself from Mishum Tchilasan is one issue, but on the other hand, you have to think about this Gemara, which tells us, Kedei Shalotei Machshil on the Yasad Lavo. You want to make sure to do your best when you have a mitzvah which people might be lax about, which people might not be excited about, for example, the Bikurim, or for example, going on a Hatzalah call and spending the rest of Shabbos away from your family. Imagine a 3-day Yantiv. Friday night, the Hatzalah member goes in. He's stuck for the rest of Yantiv. His family's all alone. So how can you assume such a thing? Says Rav Herzog, we have to take that into consideration as well and understand that these Hatzalah members will not want to be willing to go on a call in the future if this is what we're going to tell them they have to do. So this is a very important point. Now, make no mistake, that doesn't mean that whenever somebody goes into the hospital, it means they're allowed to come back. If you happen to be the patient who went into the hospital because there was a broken arm, and now it was not a life-threatening issue, but it was something that had to be taken care of, you went into the hospital, now you're let out on Shabbos afternoon. It doesn't mean you're just allowed to get in a car and drive home. That is not permissible at all. You should stay in the hospital for the rest of Shabbos, unless we're talking about somebody who's in a situation where it's going to be dangerous for them to stay there, or it's not going to be healthy for them to stay there, whatever it might be. But if it's just somebody who has a broken arm, broken leg, whatever it might be, and now they're discharged from the hospital, it's just another few hours till Shabbos is over, that's not a simple point to allow the person to come back on Shabbos. Even though many people do it, it's not necessarily the correct thing to do. So that's one case where we find Kedei Shalotehe Machshil on the Yasa level. We find it important that a person has to be encouraged to do a mitzvah that they might find difficult for themselves to perform. The Ramah writes in Yeredeya, take for another example, in Hilchos Tzedakah, the Ramah talks about the following. Look at the Ramah number Beis. Lo yispar adam bitzdaka shehu nosein. A person should not be high in themselves. A person should not flaunt the charity that they give. Ve'im yispar, and if a person does do that, lo dai she'ena mekabel schar, not only will you not receive the reward that is due to a person who gives tzedakah, who gives charity, ela afilu manishim oso aleha, says the Ramah. You will get punished. Why? Because our perspective is supposed to be that God has entrusted us with money. Not that it's ours and we're such good people for giving it over to others. God has entrusted us with the money. And therefore, if He entrusts us with the money, what He expects of us is that we're going to use it wisely. So why do you get any credit if you give tzedakah? There's a reason why God gave you money. That was the reason why He gave it. If you don't know how to spend it, God will take it away from you. It's that simple. So therefore, the Ramah says, person shouldn't be so high in themselves when they give tzedakah, because that is your obligation, that is your duty. There are others who aren't as fortunate, who don't have money and cannot fulfill that obligation. God has not entrusted them with that responsibility, but we who have that responsibility have to make sure that we come off and give as much as we possibly can with the right kind of perspective, with the right kind of attitude. In fact, the Gemara says in Ksubas Daf Samach Vav, there was a very big philanthropist in the times of the Gemara. His name was Nachdiman ben Gurion. He was one of the most famous personalities in that generation. And the Gemara tells us that although he used to give away so much money to tzedakah, and although he would feed all the aniyim who came through his house, and although he was supporting all the Torah institutions and everything that there was, all the schools, everything that they needed help with, he was helping out with, the Gemara says ultimately he lost all of his money. And it got to the point, it was so bad that his daughter was seen picking through the garbage to find a little bit of scrap of something to eat. And somebody went over to her and said, how could it be? Your father was Nachdiman ben Gurion. He was the one that was such a philanthropist. He was giving so much tzedakah, such an altruistic personality. How could it be that you lost everything you have and now you're picking through the garbage to find something to eat? And the Gemara says the answer is because l'chvodahu da'asa. Everything that he did in his life, all the contributions that he made, all of the involvement that he had in the various tzedakah organizations was only l'chvodahu da'asa. He did it just to pat himself on the back. All he wanted was the acclaim. He wanted to be honored by all the dinners. And therefore, he lost all of his money ultimately because that is not the proper perspective that a person is supposed to have when God has entrusted them with money. Look, in fact, in the Magen Avraham, in Simen Kuf Nun Hey, that's in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, where the Magen Avraham says a very strong Lashon, quoting the Sefer Hasidim. Kala Osa Zecher LeDavar, somebody who contributes something to a cause and says, I need you to put up a statue with my picture on it, I need you to put up whatever it might be, a big plaque in the hallway that everyone should see, I was the one who gave, who dedicated this. Lo Yielo Zecher, says the Magen Avraham. You want to have a remembrance? If you do that, you will not be remembered. God will make sure that you will not be remembered ultimately. Maisa Ve'echad. He says there was a story, Shayabona Beis HaKnesses, Yafe. There was a community that was building a beautiful shul. Beratzu HaKahal Hishtatef Imo B'mos. Everybody in the community wanted to somehow take part in this beautiful mitzvah. You're building a new shul. We all want to have a part in it. We all say that we were instrumental in building this building. Once heard a beautiful insight. We say every Shabbos, Tamidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. So Tamidei Chachamim bring peace into the world. Now, we all know, doesn't always happen. It should be the case, but it's not always the case. But we learned from a pasuk, Al Tikrei Banayech El Banayech. My father told me, Dr. Lamb once said at a Chag HaSmicha, that the only joke that he's found in Chazal is that line. Tamidei Chacham Marim Shalom Ba'olam. He can't understand what Chazal we're talking about. He thinks that's a joke. So anyway, that was obviously a joke of his. But the Gemara learns it from a pasuk. How do we know? Al Tikrei Banayech El Banayech. Don't call it your children, rather your builder. So what exactly does that mean? How does that teach you that Talmidei Chachamim are Marbe Shalom Ba'olam? So I once heard a beautiful interpretation that perhaps what it means is if you want to know how to bring a community together, if you want to know how to make everybody feel invested in your community and connected to everything that your community stands for, it is going to be Al Tikrei Banayech Ela Bonayech. Call them all builders. Allow them to take part in whatever you are building. You're building a new mikvah, let everybody take part in it. Let everybody contribute. Let everybody be involved in whatever it might be in making that mikvah go up. You're trying to build a new building, don't take it all for yourself. Don't say, no, this is the plan, this is what we're doing. Take everybody's input. Allow everybody to have a part in it, and that's the way they're going to feel invested and more cohesive, because if they pass the building and every time they see, look, I worked so hard to make that building, I worked so hard to build that mikvah, I worked so hard to build that school, it will be very difficult for them to pull back from it. They won't be so easily gotten rid of. Now, sometimes that's a bad thing. You want to get rid of someone on the board, you can't get rid of them because they just don't belong there, but they've contributed so much. But at the same time, if you think about how much that brings a community together when you allow everybody to take part in the building of an institution, that's the way to be Marbe Shalom. So over here he says that there was a story, that there was a community that wanted to build a shul, and everybody wanted to contribute, v'la ratza, but the big philanthropist in the town said, no, I'm going to build it on my own, it's going to be my project in my name, I don't need anybody's help. And why did he say that? He said, I want that my future generation should know, this is what you do when you have money. You build a shul, you show everybody how important the shul is and all the community institutions are, I'm going to do it on my own, this way my grandchildren, when they grow up, will see, this is what life is all about. And the Magen Avraham says, "Bekala Zaro." Ultimately, the person was left with no offspring. Because that's not a proper attitude. So, you'll ask, if this is what the Rama says, and this is what the Magen Avraham says, well, nowadays, don't we know that we put up plaques all over the place? You can hardly even find an empty spot in a shul that doesn't have a plaque on it. So how do we explain what we do? Well, says the Rama as follows. The Rama quotes the Rashba in a tshuva, and the Rama tells us in number Dalet, "Mikal Makom, Mi Magdish Davar Litzdaka." Even though, yes, The Magen Avraham tells us this frightening story that somebody lost all of his children. And the Ramah himself told us that we shouldn't go and try to do it for ourselves, like the story of Nakdiman Ben Gurion. Still says the Ramah, Mutur lo sheyichtov shemo alav, sheyehei lo lezikaron, v'ra'oi lasos kein. Says the Ramah, nowadays, this is the proper practice, and this is what we do. Why is that the case? So the Shaar HaTshuva explains, because we all know that nowadays human nature is, if we're not going to give somebody a little bit of encouragement, then next time we come around for an appeal, they're not going to want to do it. If we don't put your name on it, next time you're going to say, I have no interest in being involved in this. Look, they showed no appreciation last time. I don't want to be involved in this for the next time. Unfortunately, that's the society that we live in. Unfortunately, that's the reality that we all have in our lives. But the Ramah says we have to deal with the reality in which we live. And therefore, since this is the reality, that's what we have to do. La havdil elef alfei havdalos. You think about 1,000 times alfei havdalos. You think about what many of the Arab communities do. They'll name a soccer tournament after a terrorist bus bomber. Why? Because that will encourage the youth to do the same. So we try and encourage our communities to do something that we feel is positive. In other parts of the world, they encourage their communities to do something that they feel is positive. And the way to do that is by putting someone's name to it. You name a summer camp after somebody who blew up a whole building. That's going to encourage the kids that this is a wonderful virtue. This is a great way of living life. And that's the same, lahavdil, that's the same way that we understand kedei shelote machshilan liyasadava. We believe in encouraging people to do mitzvahs that are sometimes difficult for them to perform. It's hard for somebody to give so much money away. Even though, yes, we all know in the back of our minds that this is our obligation, this is our duty, this is what we should be doing. But it's difficult for us to part with so much of our money. And therefore, we have to give some sort of encouragement, says the Ramah, in order to allow people the opportunity to give once again and to encourage others to do the very same. So that's reason number one that the Gemara gives, why we stand up for the people that bring the Bikurim. Again, it's to encourage them to do that mitzvah once again in the following year. Yeah?
Just, you kind of answered the question, because I was just having a discussion with my daughter-in-law yesterday during the field in shul, and we were talking about why you have to announce all the names, whereas some people give anonymous names. Mm-hmm. And she was like upset by why do you have to announce all the names, and I sort of remember hearing beforehand that it's to encourage other people to donate also.
Mm-hmm.
If someone else, gee, they're giving this kind of money, I better give it also. Yeah. So it's along the same, what you had just, I mean, you answered the question in dollar A, whatever.
Okay. So while we're at it, I should say that all of the programs this year have cost us a lot of money. And over the summer, the programs are going to cost us a lot of money as well. If anyone is interested in having a Zecher V'Shem, if anyone is interested in supporting the work of Talmud Torah, which is obviously the greatest asset that our community can ever have, that we teach Torah, that is something which would be a tremendous help, and that is something that would be a great schus to do with your money. We don't have to do it out loud. If you want to do it anonymously, it's also fine. So this is reason number one that the Gemara gives, why we stand up for the people who bring the Bikurim. Reason number two the Gemara gives is because Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita. How happy, how excited we are that people are now performing a mitzvah. At the time that you watch someone perform a mitzvah, you should stand up for them. It's so exciting. So you'll ask, what do you mean? I light Shabbos candles every week. My family doesn't stand up for me. The answer is, well, it's not that exciting. We don't do it whenever we have a mitzvah every single day of the week or every week on end, that's not so exciting. But when we have Bikurim, which is once a year, we stand up because we have chavivas to the mitzvah, because it's very exciting. Along those lines, the Bartanura writes in his commentary on the Mishnah there, in Bikurim, he says, well, this is not limited only to Bikurim. This is any time we have something which is infrequent, a mitzvah that we perform infrequently, we will stand up to show our appreciation, our excitement for the mitzvah itself. For example, he says, we stand up when we bring a baby into the shul, for the bris milah. Who are we standing up for? Who are we standing up for exactly? The baby? What's so special about the baby? You stand up when you go to a levaya. Now, I beg your pardon. Let's all be honest. Very often you go to a levaya, you couldn't stand up during a lifetime. So now all of a sudden they bring the aron in. Now you're going to say, they make an announcement. Everyone should stand up. Please rise. Why please rise? Why are we rising? We would never rise for the person in their lifetime. We don't care about that person. So now, at the end of life, it's very easy. You go to their funeral. But why are we standing up? Anyone ever think about this? So if you go to a levaya of someone you really respected, you really regarded, so you stand up for them. But if you're at a levaya of a person you just couldn't stand, but you're going to the levaya anyway, why are you standing up? The answer is, says the Bartanura, we're standing up out of respect to the Chevra Kaddish who is performing the mitzvah. That's why we stand up. And the Bartanura says we stand up also when we perform a bris for the people that are involved in bringing this child to perform the mitzvah now. Not for the child. What has the child done in its life? Never done a mitzvah? Doesn't have any Yetzirah? What are we so excited about this kid? It's because we're excited about the fact that we're about to perform a mitzvah. And along those same lines, the Ramah says in Hilchos Tzedakah and Yeredei Osim and Reish Nun Vav that when a Gabbai Tzedakah comes around in Shul, we should all stand up when they come around with the Pushka. Why? Not because it's in the middle of davening, but rather because we have respect for the person that is going to perform the mitzvah of encouraging others to give money to tzedakah. That's the reason why we stand up. That's the reason why we stand up. Now, the Ramah says, if the person takes a salary for this, then there's no reason to stand up. The same way I go to work and I'm an accountant, and you go to work and you're a collector of money, so why should it make any difference? You don't stand up for me, so we don't stand up for you. But if you have a volunteer in the shul who's doing the uncomfortable job of getting people to give money, this is something that you stand up for because you respect them for the fact that they are encouraging people to give money. This is what my father writes in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that it's very unclear why is it, if you ever go to davening during the week, that we stand up by Vayivarech David. Nobody really knows why we stand up when we say Vayivarech David. When we say Az Yashir, so we stand up because the Shira is very exciting. But Vayivarech David, why do we stand up? So some Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky suggested maybe the reason why is because the practice is that that's when the tzedakah Gabbai goes around to collect the tzedakah, because we say V'ha'osher V'ha'kavad Milfanecha. That's when everyone gives the tzedakah. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said, this is why perhaps we stand up Vayivarech David, because that's the time during davening when the Gabbai tzedakah circles around the shul to collect everybody's money. So this is a very nice idea. Now we know that we have the practice nowadays to stand up for a chassan as he's going to get married. We stand up for a kala as they're going to get married. Why do we stand up? Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that a chassan and kala are not really called a chassan and kala until they're under the chuppah, till the boy gives the girl the ring. Now he's a chassan and she's a kala. But before that happens, they just get engaged. That doesn't have any halachic status. Rav Soloveitchik felt that they only have the status of chassan and kala, which makes a lot of sense. Nothing has halachically happened until they stand under the chuppah together. So why are we standing up? You say a chassan dom al-melech, right? Everyone thinks we stand up because chassan is dom al-melech. Really? He's not even a chassan yet. So why are we standing up? What's so exciting? And for that matter, when a chassan comes into shul during Sheva Brachos, or he walks in to the Sheva, does everybody stand up like they stand up by the chuppah? No. So why are we standing up all of a sudden now when he goes to march down to the aisle, when the girl's marching down the aisle? The answer is because we stand up because of Chavivas HaMitzvah, because these people are about to perform a wonderful mitzvah that comes around only once in a while, hopefully only once for them. And therefore we assume that this is something that's a very exciting time, so we stand up out of respect for the mitzvah itself. So this is what the Bartanura takes out of our Mishnah. This all stemmed from the Mishnah when we're told that we stand up for the people who offer the Bikurim because Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita. It's very nice when we have a mitzvah that comes around only a few times a year, very infrequently, so we stand up to show how excited we are for the opportunity to partake or to participate or watch in the mitzvah being performed. Now, there was a very strange line that we read in the Mishnah, and that was they used to go outside to greet those who were coming up to bring the Bikurim, but the Mishnah said, Lefi kavod hanechnasim hayu yotzim. Lefi kavod hanechnasim hayu yotzim. So, if I'm the really wealthy farmer who lives out in the Negev, and I happen to bring bushels and bushels of Bikurim, and I'm a really special person, and everybody knows about me, I'm only seen in the newspapers, then everybody has to come out to greet me. But if Nebuch, I'm just a poor little farmer who has one pomegranate and one little date and one little something else, Shemen Zayis, so nobody's going to come out to greet me? Is that what it means? Ask the Yerushalmi, you look in number Hey, the Yerushalmi asks, V'chi yesh katan v'gadol b'Yisrael? Is there such a thing? Is there such a thing that we have different status for various people in the Jewish community? We don't believe in that. Now this is a very important question that the Yerushalmi asks. And then the Yerushalmi reinterprets everything that the Mishnah just said. It's not to be taken at face value, but I believe this is a very important message that the Yerushalmi gives us. V'chi yesh katan v'gadol b'Yisrael. Is there such a thing as somebody who is considered more holy, more dignified, more respectable than someone else? The Gemara says in Kiddushin Daf Ayin, Parnas, kivin shenesmana ala tzibur, asur lo sheyasa melacha b'fnei shlosha. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat and Siman Ches, which means when somebody is put into a position of leadership, they can't go under their car and start being the car mechanic. It's embarrassing for the community, not just for them. You now represent something larger than yourself, and you cannot disassociate the honor of the community that is riding on your shoulders. So you don't have a right to go and do dishonorable acts, even if you don't care so much about your own dignity, about your own kavod. You don't have a right to do that because it's an embarrassment to the community. If someone's walk by and watch you doing this activity, it's going to be an embarrassment to the community as a whole. Yet the Gemara says over there, Aval yachal hu livnos make. Even if you have somebody who's in a position of leadership, in a position of power, a Talmud Chacham or whatever it might be, a principal, a teacher, yet when it comes to the mitzvah of building a makeh, of building a fence around our roof, which is going to be a very sweaty activity, it's boiling hot outside, you're going to stand on the roof with the hammer and the nails, the Talmud Chacham himself is allowed to do that. Why? Because it's a mitzvah. When it comes to mitzvah opportunities, we don't say, oh, well, that's beneath me to do that. I don't get involved in such a thing because I don't want to get sweaty in public. I don't want to be banging my hammer in the nails. That's not for me. And for that matter, the Gemara says building a makeh, but it's extended to all other mitzvahs. The Shari Tshuva writes, building a sukkah. Yeah, it's sweaty, it's hot, it's difficult, but it doesn't mean that it's beneath anyone's dignity to build their own sukkah. The Chavis Yar has a tshuva where he talks about, what about somebody who's a musician? And now they have gone on in life to become something else, and now they're a big Talmud Chacham, very well recognized, but somebody calls them up and asks, I would like you to play at my wedding. So you'll say, what do you mean play? I haven't done this in 30 years. This is not what I do. But the Chassan and Kala tell you, it will make them very happy. So is it beneath my dignity to lower myself to be the musician at the wedding when that's not really what I do on a day-to-day basis? I'm one of those of the community. Now I'm going to show up at the wedding and be the band? So the Achronim say, the Chavis Yair says, yes. Because that's the mitzvah of being Mesameach, the Chassan and the Kala. I once saw a wedding album of a person who used to be the captain of the basketball team in MTA. And then after he went there, he went to Israel and he learned. And then he went to the Mir Yeshiva and never came back. It's like 20 years later. And he's still there. And he married an Israeli girl, so he didn't even come back to get married. So he stayed there. And Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel came to his wedding. And he was trying to be Mesameach the Chassan and Kala. And they have a picture in his wedding album of Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel standing in the middle of the circle with a basketball, dribbling a basketball. Because he knew it would make the guy happy. Isn't it beneath the dignity of the biggest Rosh Hashiva in the world to be dribbling a basketball? The answer is no, because that's the mitzvah. However I can make the Chassan and Kala happy, whatever would make them feel excited is something I'm allowed to do and something I'm encouraged to do. So that's what we find basically coming out of this Mishnah over here. B'chiyesh katam agadol b'Yisrael, is there such a thing? When it comes to performing a mitzvah, we're all in this together. I have to bring Bikurim the same way someone else has to bring Bikurim. Both of us should deserve the same dignity, the same respect, the same adulation for the mitzvah that we're performing. Why should it make a difference who we are? If we are performing the mitzvah that Hashem asked us to do, then we get credit equally. It shouldn't make a difference who we might be or how much of a bias we might have about ourselves. There's a story about the Brisker Rav that he made a grandchild this. And obviously the Brisker Rav made a simcha, so all the great Talmidei Chachamim, all the Gedolim of the generation came to participate in the simcha of the Brisker Rav's family, and he invited one of these Rabbanim who was there to get up and give a speech. So the rabbi gets up and he says, "Ah, what an incredible opportunity that it is for me to be at such a chash of a bris with such grandparents. This is an amazing thing to be here in this house with all these Talmidei Chachamim and with all these grandparents and parents, and everyone is great." And he's going on and on, and the Brisker Rav said, "Okay, you can sit down now." He says, "Why?" He says to him, why is my grandchild's bris any more important than anyone else's? God asked all of us to perform the mitzvah of bris milah. So what does it make a difference which family you come from? We're all performing the same mitzvah. And the Brisker Rav said a mashal at the time, which I found fascinating. He said, you know, the big gvir at the time was Baron Rothschild. So imagine in our times if we'll take it down to our generation. So Bill Gates. So there was a poor malamed in a town who barely can even have any food in his refrigerator. He was so poor he didn't have any money. And he said to his wife one day, he said, you know, if only I had all the money that Bill Gates had, I would even be richer than him. So his wife says to him, what are you talking about? Why would you be richer than him? You think you know how to invest money better than Baron Rothschild, better than Bill Gates? What do you mean you would be richer than him? He says, no, I would have all of Bill Gates' money plus the few pennies that I make every week from the salary of the teaching jobs that I have. So a fool. So the Brisker Rav said, that's the same thing over here. We're like billionaires that we have an opportunity to perform a mitzvah. It's a joke to say that on top of it, I also happen to be so special, such a fancy family, what's the difference when you're talking about the performance of a mitzvah? You're like Bill Gates. You're like the fool who says, if only I had all of Bill Gates' money, I would also be richer than him because I would have a few pennies also. It's a joke. It's insignificant. When you're talking about the whole sum that's in front of you, when you're talking about the mitzvah opportunity that you have, the great opportunity to be wealthy by doing the mitzvahs that we have, the great privilege to perform, it's insignificant what family you come from. It just isn't worth anything. It's a joke to even talk about it. And that's what the Minchas Chinuch, that's what the Brisker Rav taught his Talmidim. But then the Brisker Rav qualified the statement a little bit and he said the following. Well, it's true that when we all perform a mitzvah together, we should all go ahead and do it regardless of how dignified we are. And your mitzvah of Bris Milah is no greater than my mitzvah of Bris Milah. Everyone's on an equal plane. However, he says, when we have a community that has to perform a mitzvah as one, for example, let's say we have to perform the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. Well, we're only able to give three aliyos. Who are we going to give the aliyah to? Then he says he should single out the person that is the most dignified in the community, because we should show respect when we have a communal mitzvah, allow the most dignified person to do it on our behalf. But when we all have a mitzvah individually to perform, there's no reason that your mitzvah is any worse or better than my mitzvah. In fact, the Shari Tshuva has a fascinating story. Shari Tshuva writes in Hilchas Lulav, Sif Nun Ches and Arachayim, the Shari Tshuva talks about the following. He says there was a story in one of the communities in Europe that there was a shortage of lulavim. And they couldn't get a lulav anywhere. Couldn't get a dalabinim 1 year. So there was somebody who was very wealthy who paid a fortune of money to go ahead and buy himself a dalabinim that year. He sent the money to another community. They sent a lulav and esrog, and he walked into shul the first day of Yom Tov. He knew nobody else would have it. He was so excited. Comes up to Halal. Everyone's looking around. He whips out the lulav and esrog from under the chair. And he's showing off to everybody how excited he was that he can have this opportunity to perform the mitzvah of Dalad Minim. Now, a major machlokas breaks out in the community. Everybody turns to him and says, what a chutzpah. You have a Dalad Minim. You were able to procure yourself a set of Dalad Minim. You're not even giving it to the rabbi. And the guy says to himself, why should I give it to the rabbi? Why should I give it to the rabbi? So what that he's the rabbi? I respect the rabbi very much. However, why should I go ahead and give up my mitzvah for him? And a major machlokas broke out, till finally the rabbi got involved, and the rabbi was a little uncomfortable. What's he going to say? So he decided to take a third party who was going to be machria, the dayan in the community, not the rabbi. He was going to say, who's correct? And he said, this simple person in the shul is correct. Because why is his lulav any less important or more important than the rabbi's? We all have an individual obligation to shake lulav on sukkahs. Both the rabbi has an obligation and every member of the community has an obligation. So why should I assume that just because you're the rabbi and we only have one lulav and esrog in the community that you should get it? Why should you get it? Maybe I should share it after davening with everybody, but my mitzvah to shake the lulav is the same as your mitzvah to shake the lulav. And therefore they told him there's no reason why you should give it up to the rabbi, even though you respect him very much, but this is not part of the respect of the rabbi, because when it comes to a mitzvah opportunity, we all have an equal opportunity to do so. That's exactly what the Yerushalmi teaches us over here. V'chiyesh katam l'gadol b'Yisrael. When we're talking about offering the Bikurim in the Beis HaMikdash, when we're talking about performing a mitzvah, is there such a thing as a different status of an individual? We're all the same. We all have the same opportunity to perform the mitzvah of Bikurim and the mitzvah of Dalad Minim and the mitzvah of Neir Shabbos and Neir Chanukah. Everyone has the same opportunity and the same obligation. And there is no room for levels when it comes to the performance of mitzvahs. The Gemara says in Yevamah Samach Aleph, Atem kriyim Adam, but Einu Masa'olam kriyim Adam ela Ha'adam. By the other nations of the world, they call themselves Ha'adam with a Hey Ha'idiyah. Explained, Rav Soloveitchik, you know what it means? In our religion, we feel every Adam, every individual person, doesn't matter who you are. We're going to spend time with you. We're going to be nice to you. We're going to have time to do whatever it is that you need. We're going to try and provide it for you. In other parts of the world, it's only Ha-Adam. The only one that gets recognition is the one who's a Hey Hayidiyah Adam. Somebody who's a really extra special super personality. Somebody who has what to offer us, then we'll give them the time of day to give them the respect that they need or the favors that they're asking for. But in our community, it's not what we believe in. Everyone is an Adam. Everyone is considered on the same level. And everyone deserves the same dignity, the same respect, and the same attention. It doesn't make a difference who that person might be. Rav Soloveitchik so famously said over the mashal that Tosas gives. You have the most exalted individual in the Jewish people is the Kohen Gadol. And the Kohen Gadol, here he is preparing himself a week before Yom Kippur. And he's learning all the halachas. And he's going to the mikveh every day. And he makes sure to separate from his wife. And he's doing everything in the world to make himself the most kaddish v'tor, to be ready for his experience of Kodesh HaKadosh on Yom Kippur. Now he just goes for a nice little walk Erev Yom Kippur in the park. He's very intense. He needs to air out a little bit. So before he gets into Yom Kippur, he's nervous. He doesn't know what's going to be. He goes for a little walk in the park. In the park, he sees there's a homeless man who got drunk the other night, overdosed on whatever it was, and now has dropped dead. What do we call that? A meis mitzvah. That's a mace mitzvah. There's nobody there. This man is lying dead in the park. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody's bothering to take care of him. This is what the Kohen Gadol bumps into. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Here I am, Erev Yom Kippur. The entire Jewish people is riding on me. I've been preparing for a whole week already. Everybody's putting their trust and confidence in me. Here I am, Erev Yom Kippur. I go for a little walk in the park, and I chance upon someone. And who is this someone? A homeless man who nobody ever heard of, who nobody knows, who has no relatives, who nobody cares about? What am I supposed to do? The answer is, you do it. Even though it's going to disqualify me from performing the mitzvah on Yom Kippur of going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Even though the whole Jewish people is going to be disappointed. And in fact, Rav Soloveitchik said, if a Kohen Gadol hesitates about what he should do in a situation like that, if he doesn't see the importance of taking care of even that homeless man left alone, deserted in the park, if he hesitates and doesn't understand the importance of taking care of that man, he doesn't deserve to be a Kohen Gadol at all. Because that's what we believe in. There's no such thing as Ha'adam in our religion. We believe that every individual person is B'Tselem Elokim. And everyone has equal opportunity at life. Everyone has an equal opportunity to perform mitzvahs in life. And just because you're the Kohen Gadol, and just because it's a day before Yom Kippur, doesn't mean you have a right to ignore the person who needs your help. Even if it's at the expense of the entire Jewish people. But right now, this is your obligation. To teach the Jewish people that this is how we act. That this is what we do. And it doesn't matter who you are or what your credentials might be, we are going to give you the dignity and the respect that you deserve. So that's another lesson that we learned from this very Mishnah. Let's just talk about one final point, and with this we'll close the shir. We do have... Right, so that's the question that the Yerushalmi asks. V'chiyesh katam v'gadol b'Yisrael, is there such a thing? And the Yerushalmi reinterprets the Mishnah to mean something else. To mean something totally different. Not important for now, we're not doing Bikurim right now. But basically, the Yerushalmi is bothered with this question. How can you read it at face value? It just goes against everything we believe in. It cannot be read on the simple level. So now let's go a little bit further. We have another Mishnah in Bikurim, Paragimel Mishnah Zayin. You look at number Ches here on the source sheet. Barishona, in the early days, call me Sheyodea Likros Kore. When you come to the Beis HaMikdash and you offer the Bikurim, part of the ceremony is you're supposed to recite a bunch of psukim and chumash. Barishona, in the beginning, call me Sheyodea Likros Kore. Those who were literate, those who knew how to read, how to write, used to say the psukim on their own. Call me Sheyodea Likros, anyone who did not know how to read on their own, makrin oso. We used to help you, we used to guide you to say the words along with you. And then, nimnu milahadi. There were a lot of farmers who were totally uneducated, totally illiterate, they didn't know anything, and it was very embarrassing for them. They would show up to the Beis HaMikdash, they never went to school, they didn't know how to read the text that they were supposed to say, and they would have a kohen standing there like a two-year-old, say, Baruch Atah. It was very embarrassing for them. So nimnu milahavi, they said, forget it. I'm going to be humiliated when I come to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not bringing my Bikurim anymore. What do I need this mitzvah for? People stopped coming. Hiskinu, so they got up and said, we got to fix this. What are we going to do? They made a takana, they made an institution. Sheyuhu makrin es misha yodeya ves misha en yodeya. They made it from here on in. Anybody who shows up, doesn't matter who you are. You can be the most learned person, person who knows Hebrew inside out, backwards and forwards. We are going to say the words for you, and you're going to repeat after us. This is why the minhag has developed by a wedding as well. The Misada Kedushin says, Harei Amikudeshes Li, tells the boy what to say. Why? Because not every chassan understands the words that they're saying. Not every chassan knows how to read the paper and say what they're supposed to say. Therefore, we have an institution that makes it uniform for everybody. This is what we do universally. Doesn't matter how learned or not learned you are. We're going to do it in order that somebody should not be embarrassed if they don't know how to recite the words. That's basically what the Mishnah says over here. The same was in, the Gemara says in Misachas Megillah. It used to be when a person got an aliyah, it was your obligation to read your own aliyah. Now imagine, we would call up somebody in the shul, the guy doesn't know what hit him, he doesn't know what to do, he doesn't know how to read from a Sefer Torah, he doesn't have nekudos. So he gets his aliyah and he stands there and he doesn't know what to do. So somebody else has to come and jump in and read for him. So the Gemara says, no, that was too embarrassing, very humiliating. We decided we're going to have one designated Balkori who's going to read for everybody. Doesn't matter if you know you're on Aliyah, if you know how to read it on your own, you could be the most crackerjack Balkori, but if we give you an Aliyah, the person who's designated to lane is going to lane on your behalf. That's what we find. And we find many institutions throughout Chazal where we are careful that we don't want to humiliate somebody, so we're going to make something universal. We're going to say everyone has to do it the same. For example, we have the Gemara in Tainus Daf Chaf Vav Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, number test on the bottom of the page, Lo hayu yamim tovim liYisrael kechamisha aser ba'avu chiyom haKippurim. There was not a more festive day in the Jewish calendar than Tu B'Av, which none of us even know about, and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur? Now, if I would ask you, what's the most festive, what's the most joyous holiday of the year, you'd say Purim, Simchas Torah, Shavuos, whatever it is, Pesach, Sukkot, very exciting. Yom Kippur? Says the Gemara, why was Yom Kippur so exciting? Well, listen what they used to do. Shebahen benos Yerushalayim yotzos beklei lavan she'ulin. Yom Kippur was the day, for whatever reason, when they made Shaduchim. Now, parenthetically, that shows us that that is the most exciting day of the year when you make a Shidduch. That's what you see. On Yom Kippur is the day when everyone used to go out and go on dates. That was the most exciting day of the year. Interesting point the Mishnah makes here. So the Gemara tells us that they used to go out in borrowed white clothing. So what does it mean? Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan. Bas Melech, when you have, well, everybody used to go out on dates on the same day. So we had equal opportunity. So the problem is you have the king's daughter is coming out to find herself a prospective Shidduch. And you have the pauper's daughter is also coming out to find the prospective Shidduch. Now what's going to happen? The king's daughter comes out in her beautiful clothing with all of her jewelry and everything. Of course, every guy's going to notice her first. And then you have the daughter of the pauper who's coming out into town wearing ripped up clothing, and what's going to be, who wants to marry a girl like that? And she can't even present herself nicely. So the Gemara says, we decided, Shelo levayish es misha ein lo. We don't want to embarrass somebody who doesn't have. Therefore, everybody has to wear clothing from somebody else. Everyone has to borrow clothing from somebody else. You cannot just go and wear your fanciest clothing. You have to borrow the same white clothing from everybody else. This way, all the women in the community have equal opportunity to find a prospective shidduch, because nobody's going to get caught up by the clothing that you're wearing. Now, interesting that in the times of the Gemara, they already had boys that used to look at all the girls' clothing. It's not just today. But you see that this is something that's important. And the Gemara says that because of this, because we didn't want to humiliate someone, because we wanted that everyone should have the same opportunity, therefore we made uniformity. Everybody has to do the same thing. And the Gemara says the same thing when it comes to Avelus. The Gemara says that when somebody was sitting Shiva, it used to be the practice that all the members of the community would bring over food, would bring over drinks, like we do today as well. But it used to be as follows. If this person was a rich person, a rich family, they used to bring over drinks in gold and silver cups. If the person was just a simpleton in the town, all they would bring over is some styrofoam cups, some glass cups. Not so exciting. It was very embarrassing. And it turned out that people used to stop doing this. When a family member died, they would stop sitting Shiva. Why? Because it's so embarrassing. Everyone's going to come to Menachem Avil and figure out what my economic status is based on the food that I have brought to my house. So the Gemara says, we got to stop this. Everybody has to have uniform. Everybody has to have the same thing. And unfortunately, this trickled down also to tachrichim. The fancy people used to have fancy tachrichim, and everybody else used to have simple ones. We made it uniform. Everybody has the same set of pajamas when they go into the ground. Everybody has uniform tachrichim because we don't want that it should be a socioeconomic status. It depends how rich you were. Well, that's what we're going to bury you in. It's going to be embarrassing by the Levaya when they see what kind of clothing you're wearing. So that's what the Gemara says we have all over the place, that the Gemara says there are certain things that we instituted that nobody should be embarrassed, that we should have uniformity. Yet, when you look in the Mishnah over here, we seem to have something which is a major aberration. It's very different from the normal set of rules. The Mishnah over here tells us in Paragimel Mishnah Ches, I don't think I put it on here. I forgot to put it on here. Well, the Mishnah says as follows. I'll read it to you. Ha'ashirim. We have all kinds of farmers that would come up to the Beis HaMikdash to bring the Bikurim. Some of them had major thriving businesses, very wealthy people. Others were not so wealthy. Others were poor farmers, but they also had the opportunity and the obligation to bring the Bikurim up. Says the Mishnah. Ha'ashirim, they're wealthy people. Meviim bikurim bekalso shel kesef v'shel zav. The wealthy people, the wealthy farmers that came to the Beis HaMikdash, used to go ahead and bring their bikurim, their first fruits, in beautiful gold and silver baskets. V'ha'aniim, and the poor farmers that came out from the stick somewhere that can hardly even eke out a living, meviim osam b'sale nitzarim shel arava klufa. Mishnah says they used to take reeds, weave them together, make a little wicker basket. That's all they could afford, and that's what they would bring up to the Beis HaMikdash with the fruits inside. V'hasalim v'habikurim nitanun l'kohen. Not only that, when the poor farmer brought his bikurim up to the Beis HaMikdash, so the poor farmer's fruits and basket was taken by the kohen. So the Tosas Yontif says, how can this be? I don't understand. We have throughout Chazal, we're so sensitive, we're so careful not to make people feel uncomfortable. And we're going to have the same tachrichim, and we're going to have the same dishes by the avelus, and we're going to have the same clothing that everybody wears when they go out to find the shidduch. Everything's got to be the same. All of a sudden, it comes to the Hamikdash, and we disregard this entirely, and the wealthy people are going to show up with their beautiful baskets and make all the rest of us feel bad? And not only that, on top of that, you have to add insult to injury. Now, the wealthy man gets to take his gold and silver basket home. The poor man, who all he has is this little wicker basket that he made, the kohen is going to keep it? Why is that fair? Isn't this humiliating? Isn't this embarrassing? Why are we not concerned? So there are many suggestions that are given, and we don't have time to go through all of them. I just want to go through a Malbim. We'll learn through the Malbim together because it is such a beautiful suggestion. And I think the Malbim gives us a very important takeaway message from the entire Shavuos, the Chag HaBikurim that we just celebrated that we didn't even pay attention to. This is a very important message to walk away with. Says the Malbim as follows. And the Malbim can be found, if you want to read it in its entirety later, the Malbim can be found in Sefer Devarim, Perek Chavav, by the mitzvah of Bikurim, where it's supposed to be. The Malbim writes as follows. Derech ha'ani she'ose ba'atzmo hatene. An ani, a poor person, can't afford to go out to Lulu's and buy a basket that they're going to bring their bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. They don't have money for that. So what does he do? What does a poor farmer do when they know they have to bring bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash in a basket? Ose ba'atzmo hatene. He makes it by himself. Umistama l'shem ha'bikurim asa tena chadash kedei she'yihyeh b'tahara. That he knows, in another few weeks I'm going to have to go to the Beis HaMikdash. I better start working on this basket, otherwise what am I going to bring? So he's going and picking every day, a reed here, a reed over there, saving it. Finally he gets it all together, he starts weaving the basket together. Uba'avur shetarach ba, says the Malbim. And because this poor person put so much energy, so much effort into creating that basket, zacha, he has the great merit, not only do you have the merit of bringing your bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, but your basket takes on the status of the Kedushas HaBikurim on its own. Because you worked hard at it. But the wealthy people didn't invest anything in this. What did it cost them already? They went to the store, they bought a basket, they didn't spend any time. They didn't exert any energy. What is another $50 for a basket to you? Nothing. Rak yiknu. All they did was buy it from the store. V'hu bizui ha-mitzvah lahavi b'kli kalei ha-erech. It's an embarrassment to the mitzvah for you to perform it that way. You think you're showing such dignity, such honor by bringing it in gold and silver? You got it all wrong. What's much more meaningful is if you would bring it in a wicker basket that you work hard to create. And not only do we appreciate what you did, we show our appreciation by telling the kohen he should keep that basket and give the other ones back. Because the gold and the silver is worthless to us. But the wicker basket that you worked hard to create is worth so much more. And nowadays we live in a society, a culture, where we have everything made for us. Right? We all know that we have the pop-off Hanukkah candles. When I grew up, and I'm sure when everybody else grew up here, our fingers smelled for weeks after Hanukkah cleaning out those candles. And now not only do we have the Hanukkah candles, you'll say, well, my hands are going to get all dirty, it's going to get all over the place. We have the 10 pieces of bread made for us that we shouldn't have to get our hands dirty to put out 10 pieces of bread before Pesach. Not only that, somebody told me this year in the stores they were selling pre-made salt water before Pesach. Because we shouldn't have to make our own salt water for the Seder. It's amazing. But this is what the Malbim is talking about. You want to know, how much is your mitzvah worth? What are you saying? You spent so much money on the romaine lettuce for your Seder? You know what's worth more? If you spend time and energy preparing for your Seder. You want to know what gives value to our mitzvahs? It's not the amount of money that you spent on it. It's how much energy we see in your mitzvah. how much you exerted yourself in performing that mitzvah, that's what gives it the special status of being a mitzvah that is going to be so cherished by the Kohanim that they're even going to keep the basket that you created, not because they want to make you even poorer, but rather because they want to show their unbelievable appreciation. And says the Malbim, Uvazeh Yisyashev, and with this we can now understand, Lama lo tiknu, shehashirim yaviu gamkin betene kedo shelo yavayi sha'ani. You know, you'll ask, we have throughout our calendaric year so many institutions that were made to make things universal, to make things uniform, that nobody should feel uncomfortable. Well, why don't we find it over here as well? Why don't we tell the rich people also that they should bring a wicker basket instead of the gold and the silver? Says the Malbim, Ulamasha biyanu enu biyush lehani. Because if you have this perspective, there is nothing embarrassing about this. To the contrary. Achareshu maisi yadav she'asa l'shem ha-mitzvah. After all, this is the best I could do. I worked so hard at this. Look how much I invested for God Himself. Look how much time I'm willing to spend. Look how much energy I'm willing to put forth. There's nothing to be embarrassed of. Somebody else is going to walk in with a gold and silver basket. We'll laugh at him. He's the one who's in the wrong. And therefore, says the Malbim, this is why in this case specifically there is nothing to be embarrassed of, and we did not make it uniform. We did not make it universal because we want to allow people to show how much they have invested in the performance of the mitzvah bikurim. This is such a beautiful lesson for the Malbim to give us. You know, you think about the fact, Tosas talks about in Beit Sadaf Lamed Gimel, why is it that after Shabbos we recite Havdalah and we smell the Besamim, whereas after Yom Tov we recite Havdalah and we don't recite the Brach on the Besamim? Anyone ever wonder that? So some Rishonim say, the reason why is because the Besamim is because we have a Neshama Yisera, and after Shabbos is over, we lose the Neshama Yisera. So we have to somehow appease ourselves so we smell the Besamim to make ourselves feel better. But that Neshama Yisera only comes on Shabbos. On Yom Tov we don't have a Neshama Yisera, so therefore there's no reason to smell the Besamim. That's what some say. How can you say such a thing? Other Rishonim say, what do you mean? You don't have a Neshama Yisera on Yom Tov? After all, we say every Shabbos and every Yom Tov, Nishmas Kol Chai. That's the addition that we say into our davening. Why do we say that? Because we thank Hashem for the Neshama Yisera that we have on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Well, that would seem to indicate that we have the same Neshama Yisera on Shabbos as we have on Yom Tov. So how come we do not recite the Bracha on the Besamim after Yom Tov goes away, and we only recite it after Shabbos goes away? Explains the Ramban. And the Kedushas Levi has the same idea, and it's such a beautiful and powerful idea. Yes, we have the same Neshama Yisera on Shabbos as we have on Yom Tov. But think about how that Neshama Yisera came. You see, Shabbos is Kviya V'Kaima. Shabbos comes whether you like it or not. Every seventh day of the week, it's going to be Shabbos again. So easy come, easy go. God gives us a Neshama Yisera. When Shabbos comes, when Shabbos leaves, the Neshama Yisera is gone. But for Yom Tov, it's not that way. If the Jewish people are not involved in creating the Yom Tov, it doesn't happen. If we are not Mekadesh the Chodesh, if we don't say that today is Rosh Chodesh and 15 days from now is going to be Pesach, Pesach will not happen. It's not like Shabbos. Pesach will not happen. And therefore, because we had to exert energy, because we had to put forth ourselves to create this Yom Tov, we had to make the Kedusha come. It's not that it came on its own. Since we invested in it, that Neshama Yisera that we got will never leave us. Because something that we invest in is something that we have to keep forever. When we come off the heels of a Shavuos and we think about what it is that we've gained from the Yom Tov, and I hope everybody had some sort of meaningful experience over the 3 days of Shavuos that we just had, but we think about how the Neshama Yisera impacted our lives, and it's something that we exerted energy into. Shavuos is not something like Shabbos. It's not something that just comes and goes easily. Shavuos is something that remains with us because we invested in it. And because we invested in it, it invests back in us, and it's something that is not going to be lost. All of the blessings, all of the wonderful things that we gain from our Yom Tov experience just now, let us allow ourselves to keep them with us. This is why we did not smell the Besamim last night, because Shavuos never leaves us. A Shabbos leaves us after Shabbos is over, but a Yom Tov never does. And this is something we can take with us as we board away from Shavuos. And now we go to a little bit of a dry season until we have the Yom Narah, until we have Sukkot once again. But to remind ourselves that when we have a Yom Tov opportunity,